Welcome to Uprising. Each episode looks inside what it takes to lead the most dynamic and successful cultural movements. Some of them in the business world, some in the social realm, some in politics, and some in between. To see why people start uprisings, what gives those initiatives momentum and keeps them going, and most important, what lessons can you learn from these movements and how to apply them to your business and even personal life. Let's explore the secret to sparking movements that move people into action.
Passionate ideas.
Controversial ideas.
Uprising ideas.
The power is now in the hands of anyone.
To start a cultural movement.
Your movement.
To move the world.
Hi everyone, it's Scott Goodson, and this week we examine the rise of the women's movement in advertising, marketing, and the media sector. But since it's Mother's Day here in the United States, we want to look specifically at moms in the workforce. The topic has sparked endless discussion and promises, yet the fact remains most industries have yet to commit to moms, neither in terms of recruiting them nor creating a work environment where moms can thrive. Today, I'm speaking with Leeson Stromberg. Hi, good morning.
Hey, Scott, how are you? Thanks for having me.
Thank you for joining us. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
So I'm a culture innovation consultant. I work with companies and organizations that help attract, promote, and advance women. I'm currently, my key client right now is currently the 3% Conference. We're dedicated to creating more creative leadership and advertising. I'm also the author of the forthcoming book, Work, Pause, Thrive, How to Pause for Parenthood Without Killing Your Career.
Well, that's a perfect background for my first question to start the show. Why do so many female college graduates who start off in the advertising, marketing, media industries end up leaving it when they have children?
Well, it's not just unique to advertising, sadly. If you look at just about every industry across the field, you know, as you know, women have been graduating at greater rates than men for over 20 years from college. We're increasingly more and more graduating from graduate school on par with men, if not more than men, certainly from medical school. Point being, though, at the base, we see lots of women. There's no pipeline issue, but we have a leaky pipeline issue. When we get to the top, you're seeing very few women at the top with children, and those with children actually tend to have stay-at-home husbands. So something's happening in that kind of frozen middle. We're losing women. And the question, of course, becomes why. There's been a lot of discussion around wage equity, harassment, conscious and unconscious bias. And those things are all real and powerful. But I think at the heart of it, a conversation that we really need to start having is, what does it mean to be a parent in the workplace? And as we know, at least for the last two generations, Gen X and boomers, the pressure has really been on the mothers. We're seeing more and more millennial fathers feel that burden and pressure. But in the past, it's really been focused on women. So that big hole that we're seeing really comes down to, what do you do when you become parents? And in many cases, mothers leave.
Wow.
They don't feel they have an option.
Well, we're really wired to not support moms. That kind of sucks.
If you look at us as a country and you compare us against every other industrialized nation, we really have family unfriendly policies. Look, we have
Amazing.
No paid maternity leave,
yeah.
no paid sick leave, no mandatory vacation days.
It's
child
crazy.
Care is a joke. I know, it's a joke.
Crazy.
Because you're from Sweden, as I recall. You lived there many years, and from Canada from birth. You know how wonderful it is there. It certainly isn't wonderful here.
Well, you're getting into actually some of the things I want to talk about. I mean, so if we just think for a moment about, I go back to my mother. She was a professional in the advertising industry and creative industry back in the 1960s and late 50s
Trailblazer.
And 60s. And, you know, she became pregnant and obviously was thrilled. But then obviously anxiety set in. And she thought about what she's going to do when she told her company. And in those days, you know, women had to choose between being professionals or being a happy mother. And many women obviously left to be happy mothers. And that was in the early 60s. Has anything changed?
Well, I mean, the great news is, what has changed is that women are better educated. Your mom sounds like she was quite a trailblazer, but we're now seeing a lot better educated women. We're seeing more engaged fathers. So dads are much more engaged now. So lots of good things have happened on the home front. really, truly great things have happened. We used to talk about the second shift and all that. And I think that, frankly, we're seeing the research shows, and I know in many of the people I've interviewed for the book, we're seeing a real loosening around the rigid stereotype roles that we used to have about what was male and female home front behavior. The problem is, in the workplace, the leaders, the decision makers, are often men, and many of them have stay-at-home spouses, not necessarily maybe because the spouse wanted to stay home, but because having two career couples working 60-plus hours a week is challenging for families. So we're seeing this real lack of flexibility in the workplace. And of course, as we've talked about, we don't have national policies that really support us. So something's going to give.
So why aren't we talking more? I mean, obviously, we're talking about the importance of women leaders in advertising, marketing, and media, other sectors as well. But why aren't we talking more about caregiving and supporting this when clearly this is the crux of the issue?
Yeah, I have a friend of mine who said, it sort of feels like that old game of, you know, what was the chairs? You ran around the thing and tried
Musical
to get the
chairs,
chair.
Yeah.
That's it. And, you know, she was saying, there's one pink chair and we're all racing for that one pink chair, you know? There's been so few women at the top. You know, if you look at diversity and inclusion, there's been so few women that it was hard to be an advocate in the room. You know, when you get to three people, you know, 30%, you know, you could start seeing real change. That's where the research shows us. So I think, frankly, there haven't been enough people advocating for this. That's one problem in the workplace. And then, of course, you've got gridlock at the national level, the political level, that has just completely resisted making change. So you've got a political system that's not changing, and you've got a corporate, a business system, a workplace system that is saying, that really believes workforce matter, work first matters. And, you know, what do you get as a result of that? Male or female, you're seeing huge disengagement, huge dissatisfaction. That's not the answer. We need to really rethink who we are, what our values are, and how can we keep and retain employees. We know that that's what matters in the end.
Most people don't change just because it's right. You know, it's obviously right. There has to be some group of people who stand up and articulate and crystallize why a new way of behaving or new behaviors, new habits are better than old habits, you know, because power doesn't shift automatically. You know, if it's sitting with those who support a male-dominated industry or an industry where it's not, where there's a workplace bias against moms, it's not going to happen that people wake up one day and say, oh, of course, moms are good to have around the office, and that adds, you know, a lot of benefits. So do you think there has to be more of a push, more of a movement, maybe the focus has to evolve away from just focusing on women in leadership positions to focusing on this, let's say, structural shift that has to happen to really support, you know, the caregiver?
You're spot on. Look, for years we've been calling, we talk about the opt-out mom and talking about this as an individual woman's problem. And I think it's really time for us, and actually finally time for us, to recognize this as a business problem. And the reason we can finally focus on that is that there have been enough women who stayed in and who have risen to the top that real data is now coming through. And that data is showing us again and again that when we have a more diverse leadership team, when we have more women on boards, more women in senior management, businesses do better. The workplace is more engaged. You see greater customer loyalty, greater employee loyalty. I mean, it's just, the truth of the matter is, it's like fairy dust. Get more women in there and suddenly business does better. But we haven't had that data. And finally, we're just beginning to get it. And when you prove it with data, then frankly, it's hard to deny. And you can't just do squishy stuff and say, well, this is a women's issue. You start saying, well, actually, this is a business issue and we want to be the most competitive business. And of course, what's the way to be most competitive? We look at all this and it's not about the product anymore. It's about culture. What does a culture look like? And what does your culture engagement look like? And can you make change that way?
I think to some extent, the work culture is very much like a professional football game. You know, take no prisoners, go for the long Heisman move, the long throw. I mean, there's almost a machoism in the way we do business and the way that we achieve our objectives, rather than, you know, is there another way, a more humane way? Are the values the things that have to change that still end up, you know, achieving objectives, still end up with high productivity and great, you know, success in business, but maybe the different mentality?
You know, it's so funny. I think you're absolutely right. And we're already seeing that. I know that you've shared with me some of the great things that you guys have done at Strawberry Frog, and we can talk about that. I'd love to hear what you're doing. And for my book, I ended up interviewing the CEO of Eleven, an advertising agency here in San Francisco. And he actually came to the 3% conference, was really astounded that frankly, he kind of had a light bulb. How have I not thought about this? So he went back with his leadership team and reevaluated just about everything their agency did. Well, not only did they have a lot of great women getting promoted and seeing women advance as a result of the changes he made in the culture and in their interviewing and the way they promoted people, et cetera, and the consciousness they put to it, but he said, Lisa, it ended up being where millennials started staying. We thought this was about retaining women. We discovered it was about retaining millennials. And that's the new thing. Millennials are much more likely to say that they are committed to putting family first. There was a study out of Ernst & Young last year that showed that 58% of millennial dads have already changed jobs, passed in promotions, or quit the workforce altogether because they want to put family first. So if it's not just millennial moms, but millennial dads that are saying this really matters, it's about talent. And if you don't want to lose your talent, that becomes not about doing the right thing. That becomes about business.
So what do millennials want?
Boy, if I had that secret, I'd be running the show. but with, you know, I like to joke, I'm Gen X, my generation of women who left or kind of had to have these non-lineal careers to adapt to the really stringent workplace challenges and dynamics. We're what I call the canaries in the coal mine. We walked with our feet. We showed that we're not willing to put up with workplaces that actually don't support us during our child-caring and childbearing years, right? But millennials, they're wanting what we've wanted all along, which is to say, look, I want to bring my authentic self. And my authentic self means that I need to be able to engage with my family when the time is right. And it's not just parents, it's children. I mean, you know, we talk about working daughters or working sons with all these boomers aging. We've got a lot of burden around that. So it's not just about caregiving for children. It's about bringing your full self to the office, being engaged, and caregiving of our own selves, frankly.
So why do you think this new women's movement is happening now? I mean, obviously, it's 30 years old, 50 years old. 5 years ago, there started to be a movement. We start seeing leaders emerge. The head of Facebook has written a book about Lean In, and we're starting to see it in a lot of other areas. Why is it happening now? Why is it culminating in 2016?
It's a great question. So we are kind of at this tipping point moment, and I actually, many, many years ago, it was 1970s, there was this movie called Network, and at the end of the movie, a bunch of people they're angry at network television, and a bunch of people are standing outside screaming across the country, I'm mad as hell, I'm not going to take it anymore. And I think we're kind of a little bit at that moment where we've got all of these incredibly educated women and educated men who came up the ladder together, believe that they would be able to completely contribute fully to their professional lives and to their family lives. And then they're saying, wait a minute, I feel like I was sold a bill of goods. It's not as you present it to me. I can't, as a woman, rise to the top because I'm facing all kinds of resistance. Motherhood bias is a huge issue. And they're saying this is not acceptable. Plus, we're seeing, despite for 20 years, more than 20 years, women graduating from colleges at higher rates than men and still not making it to the top, something is wrong in the picture here. And we need to make change.
So how do we reduce this workplace bias? You mentioned before that it has to be a cultural shift, but specifically, do you see things that can happen today?
If there was one agenda I would die on the sword for, it's for a national paid leave policy that both men and women can take advantage of. Studies out of your home country, Canada, studies out of Scandinavia, have all shown that, you know, because they've had paid leave for a full generation now, have all shown that when women take extended pay leave, and I don't mean, you know, I jokingly say extended because for us, we don't have any, they actually stay in the workforce longer and are more deeply engaged in the workforce. And they stay even longer.
Why is it so difficult to get something like that passed? I mean, it seems like it makes total sense.
You know, it's a political will issue. Right now, I think the statistic I saw recently was that only 12% of Americans have access to paid leave through their companies or in their states, et cetera. That's just unconscionable. So what that means is over 25% of American women literally take less than 2 weeks. That's unconscionable. So I think it's a moral will issue. It's also, we've convinced ourselves that it's bad for business. I would argue it's bad for business to not offer paid leave. And of course, here in Silicon Valley, companies, tech companies are you know, falling over themselves trying to offer paid leave. Now we have to make sure that the people are actually taking it. We are at a tipping point moment when it comes to paid leave.
First, it's about getting caregiving status as a positive influence on business. And then once you have it, it's convincing people to actually take it.
It's a real issue, actually.
Yeah.
It's a real issue.
I know.
They don't take the full leave because they're afraid that they're going to lose their jobs.
Yeah.
And that's the other side of that conversation. So the first part of that is, let's just give them paid leave. The second part of that is, and let's actually then remove our unconscious bias around caregiving. The whole notion that women can't be full contributors when they're able to, when they've settled into their roles as mothers, is just ridiculous. Yes, we have caregiving and childgiving. So the next big issue, of course, would be childcare. How do we solve that? But it's the unconscious bias we have around caregiving and, you know, what that means. It's a real issue. We need to work on that as well.
Well, the good news is there are a lot of great examples that we can pull from so that you can see how caregiving works and how parenting can actually thrive and also provide super smart professionals who make an impact on business. And you can look at that and admire that rather than feel it as the anxious feeling that a mother felt when she, well, like my mother felt when she became pregnant.
Yeah, yes, although I will say, so Anne-Marie Slaughter, who, you know, we all know is sort of a very strong advocate for caregiving, she spoke a couple of years ago at a very intimate group of senior women and, you know, corporations across the country. And these are sort of the best of the creme de la creme. She asked the room, how many of you actually have children? And I'd say about, I think she reported that about 75% raised their hands. Then she said, okay, how many of you actually have stay-at-home husbands? 75% raised their hands. So the point is, we're not shifting the workplace dynamic. We're just shifting the genders. That's not a solution either.
What we're talking about is a fundamental change of the system so that there is that type of support so you can be a mother and a professional and feel that you're adding even greater value.
I think that's right. And I think you at Strawberry Frog, you know, I can't wait to see all the great work that you're sharing because I think you're modeling how it can be done. And that's so important to have models. And I think, frankly, men stepping up and saying, look what I've done. I've got this really engaged workforce and the men and women can kind of be who they need to be. And if you need to go to your kid's dentist appointment at 2 p.m, you'll figure it out with the way with internet and the technology and everything else. There's no excuse to say that you have to be, you know, button chair all day long.
No, no one lives that world anyway anymore. And so the fact that you can actually, especially when you're trading in ideas, right? I mean, it's extremely difficult to, in my opinion, substantiate the idea that you're actually, productive for every moment of the day. Most people are obviously on social media or doing 100 other things. But anyway, I just wanted to thank you so much for your time and your insights. They're super interesting and hopefully motivating for a lot of people listening here today. I know that when your book comes out, I would love to have you back and talk
I'd love to be back. That's great.
So thank you so much. Very interesting.
Thanks, Scott.
And have a great day.
Thanks. You too, Scott.
Okay. Take care. Thank you for joining our uprising today and listening to our show. If you missed the show, or if you want to find out more about who was on, or if you want to learn more about how to create your own uprising, please go to uprisingmovements.com. You can also download this uprising program from iTunes. Uprising was produced by Nicola Keneally and Adam Helen, with special help from Melanie Boardman, Karin Drakenberg, Philippa Freeman, Brianna Campbell, Fashad Faroudi, Mark Bruzzi, Will Isom, James Politi, and Jonathan Weeks. My name is Scott Goodson, and you've been listening to Uprising. What we can learn about movements and uprisings that are shaping our world in business, in society, and in between. For more on cultural movements and movement marketing, be sure to pick up a copy of the best-selling book Uprising, How to Build a Brand and Change the World by Sparking Cultural Movements, available on Amazon.com. Music for Uprising composed by Charles Duchateau.